the golden age of radio is on the air. Morehead State Public Radio presents classic old-time radio programs from radio's golden age, the 1930s through the 1950s. On this program of the golden age of radio, James Stewart as the six-shooter in The Escape from Smoke Falls, Spike Jones in his City Slickers, Laugh with Baby Snooks, and Try to Solve a Five-Minute Mystery. Stay tuned for the golden age of radio after today's news from NPR on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. Later on today's show, James Stewart as the six-shooter with The Escape from Smoke Falls, Spike Jones in his City Slickers, and Laugh Along with Baby Snooks at the Dentist. Right now, try to solve a five-minute mystery in the case of a death in a Turkish bath as WMKY presents the Golden Age of Radio.
Mr. Minton, how are you?
Well, hello, Joe.
You're going to take a nice Turkish bath in the steam room, Mr. Minton?
Yeah. Look at that fat, Joe.
All right, here's a towel. You like a massage after, maybe?
No, I haven't time. Say, is old man Wallace in there getting steam? I said I'd meet him.
Yeah, he must be plenty hot by now. There's five or six customers in there. Oh, I'll open the door for you, Mr. Minton.
Oh, thanks, Joe. Call me in 10 minutes.
Sure. Let me see. Mr. Turner said I should call him in 15 minutes. Mr. Wallace said that... What's the matter? Steam pipe broke, maybe? Somebody getting burnt? What's the matter in there? You got trouble? Who screamed?
Oh, old man Wallace has just been stabbed to death. He's been stabbed in the back.
Well, George, you find anything?
There's still a lot of steam in that room, Chief, but I searched it thoroughly. There's no knife anywhere. Ceiling, floor, walls...
And yet Wallace was stabbed. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And what's worse, the room was so thick with steam, no one saw the murderer do it. What about the men that were in there?
I searched them thoroughly, Chief. Nothing but this collection of towels.
Joe, did you see anyone go into that steam room with anything but a towel in his hand? You were standing right here at the door all the time.
No, sir, Chief. Just towels and maybe a toothbrush.
Toothbrush?
Yeah, toothbrush with a little black case. After the murder, Mr. Minton handed it to me as he came out of the steam room and told me to put it in his locker, but I didn't have time. Here it is, right here.
Let's see. Toothbrush, all right. Good solid plastic tube with a top to put it in. You couldn't stab a man. Wait a minute. This holder. George, quick, get Minton in here.
Right.
I'm going to look in that steam room once more, but now I know what I'm looking for.
Mr. Minton, would you please get a robe on? The chief would like to see you in here a minute.
Well, I'm glad to talk to the chief any time, but I'm sure I've told him all I know about this thing.
Here's the chief now.
Oh, hello, Mr. Minton. Just a couple of questions more. Is this your toothbrush and case?
Why, Joe, I thought I told you...
It is yours, and you had it with you in that steam room when Wallace was killed. Minton, I'm arresting you for the murder of James Wallace.
Do you know how Minton killed James Wallace in the steam room of a Turkish bath? The chief will explain his deductions in just a moment. In the meantime...
Thank you.
And here's the chief to tell you how James Wallace was killed.
The method used was most unusual. When we think of stabbing, we think of knives. But no ordinary knife killed James Wallace. It was a disappearing knife.
Ah, how could a knife disappear, Chief? It's impossible.
Not if the knife were made of dry ice. Minturn's toothbrush holder was a plastic mold in the shape of a dagger. In it, he carried into that steam room a dagger made of dry ice, withdrew it from the mold at the proper moment, and stabbed Wallace. He counted on it dissolving in the steam before it was discovered. I found a piece of it giving off its own form of steam in one corner of the steam room. Minturn killed Wallace and almost got away with a perfect crime, if the murder weapon had disappeared.
In just a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as The Six Shooter, only one of the many fine programs brought to you Sundays on NBC. Each Sunday, listen to the music of the NBC Symphony Orchestra broadcasting from Carnegie Hall. Hear the amusing adventures of Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy in The Marriage, and tune to the NBC Star Playhouse with the nation's greatest stars. It's a lineup of wonderful programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as The Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both The Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as The Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends. Now, in just a moment, immediately following this important announcement, you'll hear Act One of The Six Shooter. A Christmas gift with a future. That's how everyone feels about a gift of United States savings bonds. Because when those bonds mature, they pay back $4 for every $3 invested. What's more, they can be held as long as 10 years beyond maturity and earn even further interest. Give a gift of United States savings bonds. Now, Act One of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart.
Expected to stay over in Smoke Falls, but when I stopped off to see old Dad Somerset and found him all crippled up with lumbago, well, of course, he didn't ask me to look after his stock, but I could see he sure wanted me to, so... Well, a couple of weeks later, he began feeling better, so I started thinking about moving on. It was nearly 5 o'clock in the afternoon that day. The sun just spilled over the top of Eagle Mountain. When the buckboard pulled into the yard.
Mr. Ponsett?
Oh, evening, ma'am.
Mr. Ponsett, I'm Grace Proudley.
Oh, pleased to meet you, Miss Proudley.
I've been meaning to come out and see how Mr. Somerset's been getting along, but I just never have a minute's free time. It's canning season, you know.
Yes, ma'am. Well, Dad's feeling much better. If you'd like to talk to him,
No, just say that I asked for him. As a matter of fact, it's you I want to talk to, Mr. Ponsett.
Oh?
You see, I'm president of the Ladies' Aid Society of Smoke Falls.
Uh-huh.
We're affiliated with the church and do lots of charity work, Christmas baskets and things like that, you know. All the best ladies in town are members, and we don't just take in everybody either.
Well,
Now, this is what I'm getting at, Mr. Ponsett. Tonight's our box supper and square dance. It's an annual event. Mr. Simpling always loans us his barn for the occasion. I've spent the whole afternoon helping with the decorations. Now, Polly Sullivan, that's Wade Sullivan's wife, she's chairman of the decorating committee, but since I'm president, I felt it was my duty to give her a hand. That's what made me so late coming out here to ask you.
To ask me?
About attending the supper.
Oh,
no,
well,
I'm not going to take no for an answer.
Oh, but Miss Proudley,
I've already told folks you were planning to come.
Oh, but you shouldn't have done that.
Now, after all, you're practically the first celebrity we've ever had in Smoke Falls. The auction starts at 7:30. You won't be late, will you, Mr. Pompson?
Oh, but
And
Ms.
one more thing, would you mind wearing your gun? The men folks are especially interested in that. Get up, Sheba. Come on, someone.
Oh, but, wait a...
7:30!
Wait a minute, Miss Proudley, Say there, Miss Proudley. Oh, dear.
Well, after I gave Dad his supper, I washed my face and wet down my hair and started off for old man Simpling's barn. When I got there, Miss Proudley met me at the door and introduced me around. The only name that sank in was her daughter, Ellen. Pretty girl. I figured that when the box supper sheet pack was put up for sale, the bidding would be mighty serious.
All right, everybody, we're ready to begin the auction. We don't want the music now, Wilbur. Wilbur! Now just gather around the table here so you can get a good look at what you're buying. But remember, you can't judge a book by its cover. Now, which one shall we start with? Oh, my, look at this one. Pretty pink ribbon and white tissue paper. Why, I'll just bet you there's a whole fried chicken inside this box. Now, who's going to make the first bid? $1.50. Don't forget, gentlemen, a pretty lady's company goes with the supper.
I'll give a nickel.
Now, Spud Hooker, you stop joshing. You know we don't take any bid less than a quarter.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, who'll offer a quarter just to get things underway? Look at this lovely box. Just think some nice young lady spent the whole day fixing it up.
Then she'll be too tired to dance.
Come on, somebody. 25 cents. Why, it costs more than that.
The auction was kind of slow in picking up momentum. But when Mrs. Proudley started in to make the third sale, well, there wasn't much doubt whose supper she was selling. Ellen Proudley sort of reddened in the cheeks and tried to look unconcerned. I saw her give somebody a glance on the other side of the room, almost like a signal. Couldn't tell who it was intended for, but there were two fellas standing over there. Spud Hooker is one, tall, husky, about 25. He'd been cracking jokes and acting sort of like he owned the place. The other boy is kind of a different sort. He's thinner, shorter. He hadn't opened his mouth since I got there.
I know. Now, let's see if you can't do a little better this time, gentlemen. Here's the next supper.
Oh, boy.
My, it looks familiar. Oh, I guess I shouldn't have said anything, should I? Ellen will just about murder me when I get home. Oh! Well, as long as the cat's out of the bag, I might as well go ahead with the sale.
50 cents.
Bud Hooker bids 50 cents. A supper like this ought to be worth more than half a dollar. A little bird told me there's a chocolate cake inside.
75 cents, ma'am.
I've got 75. Now, what about it, Spud? You're not going to let Tom Leverett outbid you?
$1.
$1. I'm bid one silver dollar. Who'll give $1.25?
$1.25.
Don't forget, gentlemen, it's all for charity.
$1.50.
Now we're getting somewhere. I'm bid $1.50. Bud Hooker offers $1.50. Are there any more bids?
$2.
You're bidding $2, Tom?
Yes, ma'am.
$3.
Oh, three?
That's what I said.
Well, now, we all appreciate your enthusiasm, boys. But remember, this isn't the only supper you can buy.
It's
so
the only
just...
one I'm buying, and I'll take it right...
$4.
Huh?
Well, all right. Going once, going twice, and it's sold...
$5.
Now, Spud, are you sure...
I'll bid $6, Miss Proudley.
You're making a fool of yourself, Leverett. Ellen wants to eat with me.
My bid's $6.
$7.
Now, boys...
$10.
Oh, now you don't mean that, Tom. You can't afford $10.
No, I mean it.
Well, all right. I'm bid $10. Are there any more bids? Going once, Ellen's wife?
Go ahead, sell it to him. It ain't going to do him no good.
Now, we don't want any trouble, Spud.
Ellen's my girl, and she's eating with me.
I'll take that box, Miss Proudly. Here's your money.
Didn't you hear what I said? She's eating with me.
Get out of the way, Spud.
You're not man enough to make me move. Now, give me that box, or I'll take it away from you. Okay, Tom, you hurt me.
No!
Hold on here. Now, just a minute here. Now, hold on.
It don't concern you, Ponson.
No, maybe it doesn't. Maybe it doesn't concern me. It just seems to me that there ought to be a better place for settling things. That's all.
Mr. Ponson's right, Spud. Let's go out.
Hey, where's Britt Ponson? Dad Somerset said he was over here.
Yeah, I'm Ponson.
Mr. Ponson, Sheriff Tinsmith told me to find you.
What's the matter, Jake?
Dink Falk just broke out of jail. He shot the sheriff in the back while he was getting away.
Well, we
took him over to Doc Foster's, and he's bleeding pretty bad. He wants to talk to Mr. Ponson before he...
I'll get my horse.
Glad you got here, Britt, before.
Now, what are you talking about, Ray? You're going to be all right. The doc says you'll be back on your feet again inside of a week or so.
Don't know what I was thinking of. Letting Dink Falk get hold of my gun while I was serving his supper. Must be getting careless in my old age.
Now, well, you're not the first man to have trouble with Falk. He had a pretty fancy reputation, from what I hear.
Yeah, that's why I had to see you, Britton. My fault he got loose, and I don't want other folks to pay for my mistakes.
Well, what do you mean?
I know this town, Britt. I'll get a posse together and start after Falk.
Well, that's...
And they'll catch him, too. But going out in a crowd like that, he'll hear him coming. Falk's a wildcat killer, Brett. When he's cornered, he won't give up. Pick off three or four of the posse before they can close in.
Well, not if they're careful.
That's the trouble, though. Fellas here ain't cautious. They're bullheaded. But you'd know how to take him, Britt. No, I ain't saying it's your duty. You don't even live in Smoke Falls, but you could capture Falk without him having a chance to...
No, I'm afraid you're giving me too much credit, Ray.
If you want somebody to go along, any of the boys...
Sure, I know that,
I'd be mighty grateful, Britt. The folks here have been good to me. Wouldn't like to leave them thinking that because of me, because of what I did, some of them was going to...
No, you better take it easy.
I know, it's asking a lot. Falk's a good shot. A wildcat killer. It's asking...
We'll return to James Stewart as the six-shooter in just a moment. Recently, the American Red Cross was called on for immediate and dramatic expansion of its part in the National Blood Program, was asked to make available all the gamma globulin possible for the prevention of paralysis from polio. Experiments conducted over the past 2 years have demonstrated the effectiveness of this treatment. It takes approximately 1 pint of blood to make an average dose of gamma globulin as used for polio. And one injection protects a child for a period of 1 to 5 weeks. Therefore, there is a tremendous need for blood donations now, so that we may be able to do our utmost to safeguard our children during the epidemic period next summer. At the same time, there has been no let-up in the need for blood for use overseas and for the thousands of wounded men in our military hospitals who are still fighting for a chance to live. If you are an adult, call your local Red Cross chapter right away. Get an appointment to make a donation of your blood for the National Blood Program, which aims to supply the total blood needs of the country. Join the thousands of Americans who are rolling up their sleeves. Take pride in having helped save a life. Now, Act Two, of The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett.
Sheriff Ten Smith had been right about the town foreman of posse. Hadn't lost any time. Spud Hooker was taking charge. I was kind of surprised to see that Tom Leverett was along. But I figured he and Hooker sort of joined forces for the time being.
How is he, Ponsett?
Well, he passed out a few minutes ago. Maybe it's just as well. At least he's getting some rest.
Yeah, well, we're going after Fault. The other boys are waiting behind the mercantile.
Looks like you've got quite a gang.
I ain't got no objections to having you go along, too. Not that we need you, you understand?
Yeah.
Well, you coming?
Well, I had a little talk with the sheriff just before he lost consciousness. He seemed to think that taking out a posse after Falk wasn't such a good idea.
What's he want us to do, let him go scot-free?
No. Now, Sheriff Tin Smith sort of suggested maybe one or two men would have a better chance of catching him. They can make faster time, maybe sneak up on Falk unaware.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Well, it's okay with me. You going to be one of the boys who goes after him, Ponsett?
Well, I haven't exactly made up my mind.
You better make it up fast or I'll take somebody else.
Oh, I see. Well, in that case, I... Whoa. Say, your name's Leverett, isn't it?
That's right, Mr. Ponsett. Tom Leverett.
Mm-hmm. You want to ride along with me?
Why, sure.
Wait a minute here. I thought you said one or two men.
Mm-hmm, I did.
Well, we don't need Leverett then.
Well, I tell you, I sort of figured maybe you ought to stay in town, Hooker. So if Tom and I get in trouble, well, you could bring the posse out later.
You're trying to make a fool out of me, Ponsett?
No, I'm not.
Everybody knows I'm twice the man Leverett is. I can ride better and shoot faster and outfight him 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
You want the credit for catching Falk yourself, don't you? Well, it ain't going to work out that way. Come on, boy. I'll find Falk myself, and I'll bring him in alone. That's all right. Hey!
Well, Tom, let's go, huh? Falk's trail headed west. Up toward Eagle Mountain. And the moon was out, sort of a half moon, but it gave us enough light so we could follow the hoof prints Falk's horse had left. Along about midnight, we spotted another trail, fresher. It couldn't have been more than a couple minutes old. It cut in from one side and then went on ahead in the same direction Falk was riding. You see that, Tom?
Yeah. Looks like Spud Hooker took a shortcut.
Yeah.
You reckon he'll beat us to him?
Oh, you never know. Never know. If he does, he might save us some grief, wouldn't he, huh?
You're not anxious to tangle with Falk, are you, Mr. Ponson?
No, I'm not anxious to tangle with anybody, Tom.
But I thought, well, you brought in other outlaws before.
Oh, some. Not as many as folks think, but... I've never enjoyed tangling with any of them.
Why'd you pick me? Spud's right. He is twice the man I am.
That shooting, maybe. Yeah. But there's more to trailing a killer than being able to shoot. You know, lots of times it's more important for a man to know when not to shoot, you know.
Huh?
Yeah. Fellow's itching to pull a trigger like Spud. Well, he's apt to pull it too soon. And, Hey, look at that. The moon's going down.
Yeah.
We might as well get some shut-eye. Whoa, boy. Oscar.
He
couldn't see the trail anyway.
Spud won't be stopping for sleep.
No, don't suppose he will. That's another reason I picked you. I kind of figured he'd want to keep pushing on all night. Guy, along about this time, I just get tired. As soon as the morning sun began gray in the sky, we started off again. Falk's trail was winding up the side of Eagle Mountain now. It was pretty hard riding.
Tom didn't complain, even though I could see he wasn't used to it. Every once in a while, he almost slid out of his saddle, but somehow he managed to hang on. About noon, we reached Little Creek, and Falk's trail gave out. The other trail, the one we figured was Hooker's, it sort of milled around in all directions and then went off on a tangent. And we climbed out from our horses and got a drink of water. It tastes good, doesn't it?
It sure does.
You ever been out this way before, Tom?
Oh, yeah. Not for the last couple of years, though. Mm-hmm.
Any cabins around, place a man could hide out?
Well, not that I remember. You think we're getting close to him?
Well, he could have gone on using the creek to cover his trail, but he'd have to stop pretty soon.
Oh?
Oh, yeah. A man can't keep riding forever, even Dink Falk. So far, we haven't seen any signs that he made camp, you see.
That's so. Giant Cave.
Hmm?
Well, he might be there, Britt. It's not more than a mile away, due south.
Giant Cave.
Well, you've heard of it, ain't you?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, it'd be a perfect spot for a man to hole up. Nobody knows for certain just how far back into the mountain the cave really goes. Some scientific fellas tried to explore it last summer, but, well, their lanterns gave out before they come to the end.
Well, it sounds like something we ought to see even if Falk isn't there. Come on, let's go and have a look.
That's the entrance there, Britt, beside that slab of yellow rock.
Uh-huh.
I don't see any sign of Falk's trail. I guess he could have come up from the other side, don't
Yeah, he? That's what he must have done.
Huh?
That pony over yonder. That clump of bushes grazing.
Well, yeah, I see him.
Easy, Sorrel. Scott. Easy, whoa, boy.
You know, Jake Watson said Falk stole a sorrel when he made his getaway.
Mm-hmm. Now, we'd better close in on foot. We tethered our horses on a couple of spruce saplings, moved into the cave entrance. It wasn't a very big hole. We had to sort of bend over and crawl through it. But the room on the other side, that must have been 100 feet long, 50 feet wide. The walls were sheer rock, sort of rainbow-colored, so smooth you'd have thought somebody had been polishing them. And then the light behind us got down to a pinpoint.
He wouldn't be hiding here in the dark, would he, Britt?
Maybe. He heard us coming.
Shh. Somebody up ahead.
Yeah. You got your gun ready?
Uh-huh.
Now, don't use it unless you're pretty sure of hitting something. If we start shooting, it'll just help his aim.
Okay.
All right, now back up against the wall here behind you.
Falk! We know you're in here, Falk. You go any further, you'll get lost. You'll never find your way out. Hey, you hear me, Falk? You're wasting lead. You can't see us. We know that.
You can't see me, neither.
But we don't have to. You've got to come out sooner or later, and we'll be waiting. All right, we're going to leave you now, Falk. We're going outside and wait.
Hey, where you are?
You giving up?
No, I ain't. And I ain't alone.
What?
I got somebody with me. Friend of yours, I reckon. We're coming out together. And if you try to stop me, I'll kill him.
What's he talking about?
He ain't lying, Brett. It's me, Spud Hooker.
Spud?
I caught up with him last night, but he got the draw on me. Hold your fire, Britt. He means what he says. He'll kill me if you don't hold your fire. You've got to do what he told you, Britt. You got to.
All right, Bob, come on.
Start backing up towards the entrance. I don't hear you moving.
Britt, please.
All right, let's go, Tom. We backed out into the daylight, Tom and me, and waited for them. About a minute later, Spud Hooker marched through the mouth of the cave, half scared to death. Dink Falk was right behind him, holding a .45 aimed at the smallest Spud's back. I was pretty sure he wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger either. Sheriff Tinsmith was right. He's just a wildcat killer. He had that stampede look in his eyes as he stood there blinking against the sun. Same kind of a look you see in a steer when the herd's shoving him along. You can't stop or be trampled to death.
Hang off your guns, both of you. Take them off or I'll fix your friend here.
Falk gave Spud a shove with his gun and he jumped forward. There was an opening now between him and Falk. The next thing I knew, Tom dived forward.
Get out of Spud!
Tom tackled Spud and he rolled over. The bullet missed him, but Tom was in range and he took it. Falk aimed fire again, and I managed to get my gun out. Bullet hit his thigh and spun him around. Then his leg buckled, and he fell face down. He hadn't let go of the pistol yet. He started to bring it up. Drop it, Falk! For a second, his finger went right on squeezing the trigger, but... Nah, he just didn't have the strength. Tom? Tom, you all right?
Sure. Yeah, it's hardly bleeding.
I should have let Falk alone. I should have let you handle him, Britt.
Well, I don't know. Looks to me like Tom did most of the handling around here. I mean, if it hadn't been for him, you know.
I guess I had you figured wrong, Tom. I never thought you'd be the one to save me, but...
I wasn't saving you, Spud.
Huh?
I don't like you. I never did. And nothing's going to change that.
Then why?
I like Ellen. I like her a lot, but... Well, she's in love with you. If you got yourself killed, it would just hurt her and wouldn't do me no good.
Ellen tell you she's in love with me?
She didn't have to.
When she finds out what happened today...
She ain't going to find out.
I'm going to tell her. I'm going to tell her myself.
I don't want her to know.
It's for me to decide.
Now, listen here, Spud Hooker.
You do the listening for a change.
No,
I thought
you
I taught you a lesson last night, but it looks like...
Now, hold on. Now, I think we ought to get Tom to a doctor, don't you? And if we don't, Ellen won't have no way of choosing him, even if she wanted to. Now, come on, Spud. Come on, give me a hand. We tied Falk onto the back of his pony and started off for town. I sure didn't know what Ellen was going to do about Spud and Tom. Oh, you never know what a woman's going to do when it comes to, you know, falling in love and marrying and all that sort of thing. But I did know one thing. That picking Tom to go along with me, that'd been a pretty good choice. Ellen probably could do a whole lot worse, you know.
Ladies and gentlemen, the tradition of religious freedom and of religious worship in America goes back to the very founding of our country. So, in these days of world crisis, when our nation and all its citizens need spiritual strength and guidance, all of us should think again of what religion means to us and to our country. For it's religious faith that makes our way of life possible. During November, people of many faiths are joining in a great Religion in American Life campaign. So, whatever your faith may be, you are asked to join in this campaign. Be sure to attend and support the church or synagogue of your choice. And if you have children, by all means, light their life with faith. Bring them to worship this week. The Six Shooter is an NBC Radio Network production in association with Review Productions. It is based on a character created by Frank Burt, and the transcribed story is written by him. Mr. Stewart may currently be seen in the Universal International picture Thunder Bay. Others in the cast were Jeanette Nolan, Frank Gerstel, Robert Griffin, Forrest Lewis, and Sam Edwards. Special music for this program was by Basil Eddy, and the entire production is under the direction of Jack Johnstone. All characters and incidents were fictitious, and any resemblance to actual characters or incidents is purely coincidental. And incidentally, a great many of our friends have written in to thank us for putting the six-shooter on the air. And a surprising number of letters have requested the name of the theme you are listening to right now and where it might be obtained. Well, we're sorry, but it is music that has been recorded exclusively for broadcast and is therefore not available for home use. But we are grateful nonetheless to all of you who have written. Your kind letters are always welcome. This is Hal Gibney speaking. Tonight, hear Celeste Holm in the NBC Star Playhouse on the NBC Radio Network.
You're listening to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY with an episode of The Six Shooter starring James Stewart. Stay tuned for more classic old-time radio from the 1930s through the 1950s when the Golden Age of Radio continues on Morehead State Public Radio WMKY at 90.3 FM. Welcome back to the Golden Age of Radio on WMKY at 90.3 FM. In a moment, we join Baby Snooks at the Dentist. But right now, here's Spike Jones and his City Slickers on the Golden Age of Radio.
Coca-Cola Company presents Spotlight Review, starring Spike Jonze and the City Slickers and Dorothy Shay, the Park Avenue Hillbilly, with Doodles Weaver as Professor Fiedelbaum and George Rock. And our special guest for tonight, the eminent screen star, Peter Lorre. And here are Spike Jonze and Dorothy Shay.
Hiya, Dottie.
Hiya, Spike. Say, those sure are some outfits you and the boys are wearing tonight.
Oh, thanks, but wait till you see the next one I'm having made. It has an orange and blue plaid coat with yellow neon buttons and a rhinestone vest with blonde mink pockets. Not to mention lavender-striped trousers with green angora cuffs.
All you need with that outfit is a pair of purple shoes.
What do you want me to do, look ridiculous?
Spike, the only man I know whose clothes can outshout yours is my Uncle Fudd. Last time I saw him, he was wearing feathers.
Feathers?
Yes, he thought he was a chicken.
Well, didn't your aunt try to talk him out of it?
Oh, no, she needed the eggs.
Well, here's one she can add to her collection. It's the City Slickers version of After You've Gone. Not at all. Goodbye. Fellas, we got a request to play. I get a kick out of you.
Who from?
Errol Flynn.
Hey,
Thank you, music lovers. Fellas, that was truly the kind of music that soothes the savage beast. And one of these days, I'm going to let you play for people.
Spike, I haven't heard anything so moving since last week's earthquake.
Well, thank you, Dottie. I think you should get to know some of the great artists in my band. For instance, George Rock. George, I want you to meet Dorothy Shea.
I'm so happy to meet you, Mr. Shea. I have been hearing say that.
What musical instrument do you play in Spike's band?
I am the second pistol shot. One day, I hope to become the first pistol shot.
Well, George, to become the first pistol shot, you have to practice more.
Oh, I do practice. I keep studying all Saturday and Sunday just so I can improve my crescendos, rubatos, scherzos, and fortissimos.
What bands did you play with before you joined Spike?
Well, I was Tommy Dorsey.
Yes.
Henry Busby.
Yes.
Andre Kospelonik.
And
Clyde McCoy.
It's a good thing you didn't say Charlie Revac. That's really polishing the old apple tree, Dorothy. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
Spike,
we turn
Spike,
to...
it's me.
Professor Fiedelbaum. Professor, that's certainly a beautiful flower you're wearing in your lapel.
It's a present from my father, who happens to be one of the world's greatest horticulturalists.
He's a what?
Horticulturalist.
Thank you.
He experiments with flowers all day long. Why, he could grow anything. But sometimes I wish I could have had a mother.
Professor, you mean to say you never had a mother?
I told you my father could grow anything. If any young girls want me, I'm very easy to take care of. All you have to do is water me twice a week.
You must be kidding.
I wish I were. My life has been very sad. I've had a lot of trouble growing up. Why, when I was 14, I started to blossom out.
What's wrong with that?
Well, what's wrong with that? Other boys were growing beards. I was growing blossoms. But before I go to seed, I'd like to sing the hit tune of the day, Quanta La Gusta. I believe I'm in voice. Indubitably in voice. Music maestro, if you've got the nerve. Quanta La Gusta, 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 Quanta La Gusta, 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 Quanta La Gusta, La Gusta, La Gusta, La Gusta, La Gusta, La Gusta. Oh, pardon me, I went to sleep. Maybe I better start somewhere else. We gotta get going. Where are we going and what are we gonna do? We're on our way to somewhere. I'll be on my way back to Hermosa if I don't put a joke in here soon. Here's a joke. Once upon a time, there were two Irishmen. Now there are more. The three of us and you, what'll we see there? Who will be there? What'll be the big surprise? Is this a song or a quiz show?
Ooh, no, no.
There may be senoritas with dark and flashing eyes. We're one RA. No, we're way out one. All out done. Have some fun. I'm a bum. No, I'm not. Speaking of bums, a man came up to me today and said, can you lend me a dime for a cup of coffee? I said, coffee's only a nickel. He says, yes, but I have a date. We're on our way. Pack up your tooth. Tooth?
All I want for Christmas is my tooth from teeth. Tooth from teeth.
Wrong song. We're on our way. Pack up your pack. And if we stay, we won't come back. That's logical. How can we go? We haven't got a dime, but we're going and we're going to have a happy time. Quanta La Gusta, La Gusta, La Gusta, Quanta La Gusta, La Gusta. Here we go again. Quanta La Gusta, La Gusta, Quanta La Gusta, La Gusta, Quanta La Gusta, La Gusta. When I sing this song, I get as tired as if I'd run a mile race. A mile race, and there they go. It's Venus just ordering fun. Jaime Pink is flashing. Gaines Messina second. Ray Gilbert and toothpaste is being squeezed out on the rail. That's a brush off. We're going and we're going to have a happy time. Cuando le gusta!
Tuned up. How about you? Are you tuned up?
Yes, I'm tuned up. Are you tuned up?
Sure, I'm tuned up.
Then I guess we're both tuned up.
Hey, what's going on here?
Sounds like they just came in for a tune-up.
You know us, Mr. Jones. We're Morgan and Morgan banjo players.
Banjo players?
Sure, you know. Plunk, plunk, plink, plink. I do the plunk, plunks.
What about your partner?
Boy, does he plink.
You should hear our version of Art Mooney's I'm Looking Over a Four-Leaf Clover.
Jones and the City Slickers may be seen in person in their musical depreciation review tonight in Niagara Falls and this coming week starting tomorrow in Rochester, Syracuse, Utica, Schenectady, and Buffalo, New York, and Youngstown, Ohio. And don't forget to tune in again next Saturday at the same time when the Coca-Cola Company presents The Spike Jones Show.
Hey, I love it, Mike! Don't miss Spike!
The Coca-Cola Company presented The Spike Jones Show, transcribed.
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
There she is again, ladies and gentlemen. Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. Well, it took several toothpicks before Daddy could get finally to the dentist, but here they are, just entering the office.
Oh, hello, Mr. Higgins.
Oh, hello, nurse. Is the doctor in?
Yes, he'll be free in a moment. Snooks, aren't you going to say hello to me?
No, I ain't.
Snooks, don't be rude. Say hello to the nurse.
I don't wanna.
I guess she's a little out of sorts today, nurse. Come on, sit down here next to Daddy. The dentist will be ready for you in just a minute.
I wanna go home.
Snooks, you mustn't feel that way. Why, the dentist will fix your teeth and make you nice and pretty.
Did he fix your teeth?
Of course.
I wanna go home.
I'll go in and see if he's ready, Mr. Higgins.
Thank you, nurse. Now listen, Snooks. This is the third time I've brought you to the dentist.
Is it?
Yes. And each time we come, you forget which tooth hurts you. This time, you've got to be absolutely sure. Now, which tooth hurts?
I forgot.
Now, there you go again. How is it you always forget when we come here?
It only hurts when I eat candy.
Oh, all right. Now, here's a piece of chocolate. Now, eat it and tell me which tooth hurts.
All right. That's good chocolate, Dad.
Never mind that. Which tooth hurts?
It don't hurt.
But you just said your tooth hurts when you eat candy.
It does when I chew it.
Well, didn't you chew that chocolate?
No, only with my tongue.
Oh, all right. Here, try another piece. And chew it with your teeth this time.
All right. I like this chocolate, Daddy.
I don't care whether you like it or not. I want to know which tooth hurts.
That piece was too small. I couldn't feel it.
Oh, I see. Well, here's the last piece of chocolate. The very last piece, you understand? Now chew it slowly.
All right.
Oh, fine. That's fine. Did you find the tooth that hurt you?
No.
Then why did you yell?
Because there's no more chocolate.
Snooks, you ate that whole bar of chocolates and you didn't find out which tooth hurts. Now, what's the idea?
I just remembered.
Remembered what?
It only hurts with ice cream.
Now, you stop stalling. You've got to have that tooth out. And look, you have no reason to be afraid. This man is a fine dentist, and he never hurts anybody.
What's that, Daddy?
Why, the dentist is working on a patient.
With a hatchet?
Now, don't be silly. I tell you, he never hurts anybody.
Daddy!
Yes?
My tooth feels fine. I want to go home.
Oh, sit still.
All right, Snook. The dentist is ready for you now.
Oh, stop that. Come on, he won't hurt you.
Oh, I can see she's going to be a brave little patient, aren't you, little girl?
Where's the man?
What man?
The one you killed with the hatchet.
Oh, that's rich. Hatchet, head. Now, you just sit in this nice, soft chair.
Oh, Daddy.
Now, don't be afraid, dear.
Of course not. Do you want your daddy to hold your hand?
No, I want him to hold yours.
Now, my dear child, there's nothing to worry about. I'm perfectly painless.
But I ain't.
All right, child, now open your mouth and I'll just touch the tooth with my finger.
Go on, Snooks, open your mouth.
All right.
That's it. Now, is it... Ow!
What happened?
She bit my finger.
Does it hurt?
Of course it hurts.
I thought you was painless.
Now, Snooks, you cut that out.
I want to go home.
Now, just sit still and it'll all be over in a minute. There, open your mouth again. That's better. Now, when I touch your tooth, tell me if it hurts. Does this one hurt?
Mm-hmm.
And this one?
Mm-hmm.
This one, too?
Mm-hmm.
All your teeth hurt?
Mm-hmm. My feet, too.
Your feet, too?
Yeah, I hurt all over. I want to go home,
oh,
Daddy.
Oh, Snooks, stop carrying on like this. Why, I've had dozens of teeth pulled, and I was never afraid. I never made a sound.
Let me see you.
Oh, well, none of my teeth bother me. But just to show you, I'll sit in the chair and let the dentist do anything he likes to me.
That's a good idea, Mr. Higgins. It'll give the child confidence.
Yes, of course. Let me sit in the chair, Snooks.
All right, Daddy.
There. Now, see how I open my mouth without any trouble?
If you pull your tooth out with the hatchet, won't you holler?
Why, certainly not.
Pull his tooth out, mister.
Oh, but I have no tooth that needs removing, have I, Doctor?
There is one tooth that might come out.
Huh?
Chop it out, mister.
Yes, I think you'd be better off with that wisdom tooth.
Oh, but I haven't any.
Don't be afraid, Daddy. I'll hold
your hand. Now, wait a minute. This is ridiculous. That tooth doesn't hurt me.
Daddy, he's a scaredy cat. Daddy, he's a scaredy cat.
Now, we'll discuss this later. Snooks, get back in that chair. Quick, Doctor. Yank it while she's yelling.
All right, hold her. One, two, three. There you are. It's out.
Now, see? Doesn't it feel better? Now, what do you mean, the wrong tooth? Where's the tooth that's been hurting you all the time?
It's in my pocket.
In your pocket?
Yeah. It fell out last night.
A broadcast from September 14th, 1939, Fanny Bryce as Baby Snooks. Also Spike Jones and his City Slickers. This has been the Golden Age of Radio, classic old-time radio programs from the 1930s through the 1950s. Material for this program provided by the Internet Archive, an online nonprofit library of books, movies, music, and old-time radio shows, on the web at archive.org. Tune in again for the Golden Age of Radio next week at the same time and channel on WMKY at 90.3 FM and online at WMKY.org.